I will. Can I stop? I will call to order the October 4th, 2021 City of Kirkland Design Review Board meeting, and we will begin with a roll call.
Randall Brand.
Present.
Brad Brown. Carlos Castaneda. Ting Chen.
Here.
Shoshana Cohen.
Here.
Adam Crane.
Here.
And Amy Tars.
Here.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Actually, Jeannie, really quick, I noticed that Brad Brown's listed as a panelist. So maybe, Brad, if you're online, can you state that you're here?
I don't see Brad.
Yeah, present. Can you hear me?
There we go. Oh. Perfect.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, here you are. Okay. I would like to welcome our new member, Amy, on board, and thank her in advance for her meaningful contribution. And hi, Amy. And as I see, no minutes to approve. Is that correct? So we will move forward to the announcement on tonight's agenda, Design Response Conference for Kirkland Urban East Building. Are there any comments from the audience that are unrelated to the item on the agenda tonight? Please come forward now. Do we have someone? I don't see any. And I see no other unfinished business, so we can move forward with the Design Response Conference for a six-story mixed-use building with structured parking in the Kirkland Urban Development. I will turn to Tony for staff presentation.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Tony Levitt, representing the Planning Department. And let me share my screen here. Everybody see that? Oops, here we go, sorry. Okay, there we go. So yeah, this is the Kirkland Urban East project. This is the final phase of the Kirkland Urban project. And again, this is the design response conference for that application, the project. The goals for tonight's meeting are for the DRB to conduct a design response conference. We'd like you to review how the applicant is responding to your direction from the conceptual design conference that we had back in May. Review the project for consistency with the design guidelines and provide feedback and consider any public comments if applicable. Again, the DRB's authority is to review the project with consistency with the design guidelines for the Kirkland Park Place mixed use development. And also applicable zone regulations that require DRB approval. A staff's portion of the review is to review the building permits. We'll review permitted uses, height, lot coverage, setbacks, rooftop purposes, parking, site access, affordable housing if applicable. And also we do the SEPA review, which would be to look at traffic impacts. And in this case, the SEPA was done with the master plan, so we do not have any SEPA reviews as part of this proposal. Again, this is the project site. It is located on the east side of the Kirkland Urban Development. The address is 501 Uptown Court. The parcel is approximately 1.31 acres in size. The project will front on 6th Street, which is located to the east of the development. Again, the applicant is proposing a new six-story mixed-use building that will consist of approximately 180,000 square feet of office space and around 15,000 square feet of retail on the ground floor with four levels of underground parking below. Vehicular access to the building will be taken from 6th Street and actually will access the road to a little to the north of the building and then dive into the existing parking garage there. Some of the key zoning regulations that apply. So the particular property is within the CBD 5A zoning, which allows a maximum height of 115 feet as a measured above the average building elevation. Rooftop appurtenances may exceed the applicable height limitation by a maximum 6 feet if appurtenances and screening do not exceed 25% of the building rooftop. Design guidelines require that the ground level retail height be a minimum of 14 feet in height. Required setbacks from the south property line is 25 feet. There are no other required setbacks for the project. And finally, there are some miscellaneous master plan development standards that the city will review for compliance with, including open space. The project has to meet LEED CS Gold, neighborhood servicing, retail and retail services, underground parking, et cetera. So we'll be reviewing those with the building permit to make sure the project complies with those aspects. So from the conceptual design conference, again, we had that back in May. The applicant presented three massing options to you. The DRB expressed a preference for massing option three, which is shown here. At the meeting, the DRB requested items to show design treatments of the building, detailed cross street sections that include the building and neighboring buildings, detailed plaza, pedestrian landscape plans. Also requested that the applicant bring either a sketch up or a 3D model for you to look at this meeting. I've provided a summary in the staff report of those items that you had requested. So as far as the design guidelines are concerned, so first we look at, there's kind of two, it's a little bit different than our normal design districts. In this case, we're looking at just building design and site planning. So as far as the design guidelines that apply to building design, the guidelines within the master plan state first, orientation to the street. They want to ensure that buildings contribute to the liveliness of it says parkway, so in this case we're Kirkland Urban now, public spaces and overall community character. Massing articulation, create a variety form and massing through articulation and use of material to maintain a pedestrian scale. Treatment of blank walls, making sure that they any blank walls are treated appropriately. Encourage high quality design, ensure the buildings of the project are constructed of a quality addition to the Kirkland community. And building the diversity, they want to ensure that the buildings in the project are distinct and respond to the unique character of their specific function and location. Staff has done a review of the applicant's submittal for the design response conference. We feel that the project does a good job of activating the street and public spaces around it. The extensive use of glazing on the ground floor and a colonnade that provides weather protection are unique features for this development. The applicant has done a good job of using upper level massing cuts that were effective in reducing the overall bulk of the building, and that the proposed timber digrid lateral system creates a unique building that is quite unique for Kirkland and for specifically this development and for Kirkland overall. So what we're going to want you to look at tonight from the board perspective is, does the building do a good job of connecting to 6th Street in the existing public spaces? Does the building provide enough horizontal and or vertical modulation when viewed from key vantage points near the project? Have blank walls, if applicable, been adequately addressed? And does the exterior building design and material options provide enough diversity to the project? So the second piece we're going to look at is for this project is site planning. So we're going to look at as far as the design guidelines are concerned, from a streetscape perspective, they want to maintain a continuous and safe streetscape with pedestrian character. As far as the public spaces, provide a friendly pedestrian environment by creating a variety of usable and interesting public and semi-public open spaces. Environmental considerations, what we mean there is to optimize pedestrian comfort using natural environment conditions, promote a pedestrian and bicycle friendly atmosphere. As far as lighting is concerned, we want to ensure that the lighting contributes to the character of the project, provides personal safety, and does not disturb adjacent developments and residences. And finally, if there are any service areas, we want to screen those from the public view. In this case, staff looked at the submittal. We feel that the colonnade creates a very, very unique pedestrian experience, that the plaza creates inviting spaces for visitors and employees within the project. The back of house functions will all be actually located in the parking garage, so screening is not needed in this case. And finally, the applicant has noted that the lighting plan is still being developed and will be provided at a future meeting. So that does it from what we want to look at from a site plan perspective. So some of the discussion items, first, does the design of the pedestrian plaza around the building meet the applicable design guidelines? Is the design of the public plaza spaces adequate? And finally, provide feedback on use of specific materials and landscaping that the applicant has outlined in their submittal package. So again, to conclude, tonight we want you to provide some feedback on how the Kirkland Park Place mixed use design guidelines apply to the proposed development. Just a note, I did include those guidelines as part of the package, their attachment 3 within the package, packet for the project. Provide feedback on the building design and site planning for the project and consider public comments. So with that, that concludes my presentation. Any questions from the board? Okay, hearing none, I will pass it to the applicant for their presentation.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, members of the Design Review Board. We're really excited to be back to talk about KWE's project. So I'm going to share my screen here quickly. And I also wanted to mention that I'm here with, so on behalf of the entire design team, which includes Sarah Architects, but also David Malda from GGN Landscape Architects is here. They're based out of Seattle. You might know some of their great work they've done in the area. So hold on a second, I'll share. And for those of you new to the board, my name is Thomas Robinson, and I'm the founding principal of Lever Architecture. We're based in Portland, so just a little ways down here. So I wanted to point out that this is one of two meetings that we would anticipate with you on this project, and kind of tried to divide it up a bit. So this meeting is really about addressing the comments that you made last time, but more specifically, really thinking about how the landscape really connects with the design of the building, really refining the building massing and really incorporating landscape into the cuts that Tony mentioned. And then really talk about the development of this really special building structure, which will be really one of a kind in Kirkland. We've done some initial studies on the facade design. And we've also explored initial building material concepts. And on the right are sort of the topics really for a future DRC. So we're kind of touching on some of the materiality, but we're still studying that. So I wanted to kind of recap your comments from the last time around, and also just talk a bit about the overriding concepts that have been driving the project. So these are sort of the key project drivers. Really this idea of stewardship of the watershed, a real investigation and connection to Moss Bay, this history of industry that was in Kirkland. It was a shipyard, it was a working waterfront. And then the idea of a mass timber building being something that has a low embodied carbon during construction, but also it sequesters carbon in the wood itself over the long period. And then this is, this site is a real point of connection within the community and really thinking about how we can leverage and strengthen that. And then thinking about how regional mass timber can have an impact both locally and regionally. So some of the two key drivers that we came to working with the client and the cities, this idea of resilient communities and environmental stewardship, and really thinking about the intersection of those two so that we can create a building that fosters connections between users and the greater Kirkland communities, but also really then extends out to thinking about environmental stewardship, a building having an impact, not just in terms of its material, but in terms of how it uses energy. And so we have created this sort of sustainability story, and this is just very high level, but there's a lot of content in each of these, this idea of embodied carbon and the mass timber, this idea of maximizing on-site water, really thinking about how we can be very thoughtful about how we use water, because you know the idea that materials you use actually have an impact on the habitat that, you know, in the watershed that forests are part of, and we think that this building can have a positive impact on that. And then really thinking about energy conservation. So really thinking about solar and green roofs. And this is a diagram that we use thinking about a more virtuous cycle in terms of how we think about building in the Pacific Northwest, and something that Lever has been really focused on for the last 5+ years doing these types of projects. So Tony already went through this, but just another review of the sort of options that were presented, I think, for some of the folks that are new on the commission, but option 3 was definitely preferred, and that's the one that we've developed. But I think it's also good to point out that all the options are looking at a building that's actually slightly smaller scale than the 115-foot height limit, and that was due to the desire of the client to do a mass timber project that where the wood is exposed. And that in and of itself is really one of the biggest moves that helps with the massing of the project. So these are the things that we presented last time, so people kind of have a sense. And then this is really a summary of sort of the comments that you had. And what we've tried to do is really work on addressing each of them. So really thinking about the pedestrian sidewalks and the pathways, the experience of that, showing you the street sections and the relationship to the existing buildings, detailing of the fire lane and the landscaping along the south. And then one of, Shoshana talked a lot about, you know, this is a place where parents pick up kids from daycare, and really thinking about how that landscape can actually serve that use. We also have, you know, views of the south side of the building showing the relationship to the adjacent stuff. And then we've developed the facade and we have some visualization of the rooftop, so you can really sort of see what the top of the building looks like. So I think it's important to understand the scope of the project in terms of what's in and out of the project, because it's a little bit complicated. So the red line really shows the kind of extent of what we're actually touching as part of this project. And I think one of the key things is underground, there's, you know, 300 vehicle parking stalls, but a really great 155 space bike parking area that'll be really very nice and like a whole different experience in terms of bike parking. We're also really focused on the Sixth Street approach, understanding what that's like. And then the thinking of this as a sort of entry colonnade street experience is kind of a gateway to Sixth Street. I think that's tempered by the fact that we have to have vehicular traffic there too. So the strategies that Tony talked about with the arcade and the landscape is really about tempering the fact that, you know, we do have cars coming in there and turning around. And then the landscape plaza really trying to tie together some of the pieces in the building. And then one of the key was this idea of the relationship to this overlooked stair, you know, it's the wood stair there. And then one, you wanted a lot more detail on the playground and the south fire access. So this is sort of where that sits, and we'll come back to this rendering, but gives you sort of a general sense of the kind of character of the arcade and the diagrid and these really beautiful landscape cuts that open into sort of what we call mid-door naturally conditioned spaces at the edge of the building. So it'll be very active, and we're excited to get into more detail of where we're at with that now. But before we do that, I'm going to hand it over to David.
Thanks, Thomas. Thank you all. Excited to be here. Like Thomas said, I'm David Mulda, principal at GGN based in Seattle, and I'll move quickly through the landscape design. Next. So we know where we are. Kirkland Urban is the focus for today. Next. And thinking about this project, certainly we've been thinking about this overall development and beyond. You can see the building footprint there. Next. And one of the big things that we've tried to push forward in this design is a twofold focus. One, how do we make everything else around this project better? This is the last piece of the Kirkland Urban development. So every surrounding project, every surrounding moment is an opportunity to enhance and improve what's already there. And at the same time, we think there's a real opportunity to maximize connections to the local ecology and sustainability in this project. There's a lot of paving there today, and we think that there's an opportunity to really push the story of place and sustainability here. Next. You can see in this image, just for context, I know last time through there were some questions about the existing conditions, so we're trying to really make sure everyone's oriented to what's there today. Some of the key things that we've been thinking about is that sequence from the park through the plaza, that primarily paved area on the lower zone between the buildings, and then up to this new upper level, which has a retail pavilion and some paving, as well as the turn circle partially realized there. Next. As mentioned, the opportunity to enhance existing conditions is important, but really a focus and a driver, like Thomas has talked about with the building architecture, the sustainability strategies of the mass timber, we think in the landscape side, there's an equally important story and opportunity to really push sustainability and native planting and ecologically thoughtful, not just for an experiential side, but also for the better environmental impact, which is critical. Next. Thinking about this relationship, this transition from Moss Bay all the way up through the site and to the east, we've really thought about this gateway connection that this project and Kirkland Urban in general has in a bigger conceptual framework. Next. And that's led us to really think about this upper level as this filter and connection, kind of like all of these streams once converged, then came out to the bay here. This moment is really where fourth, these different modes, bikes, cars, people, all are coming in and transitioning from the street system into this plaza network and development. Next. And that's led to the site plan that we'll walk through now, starting with 6th Street. Next. Existing conditions here that are important to note. There's a fire lane on the south side of the project. 6th is a very steeply sloping street. There's some road widening happening through there, but generally buildings have some setback in planting, which we've been trying to respond to. And there's a planned transit stop on 6th as well. Next. And so you can see the proposed site plan is really taking advantage of the fact that there's a very large shift in alignment of the sidewalk, and using that along with the steeper topography to the south to get some larger planting scaling in there. And then that sets up the entry to the bike arrival and fire lane on the south side. Of course, the north side is that important gateway movement into the colonnade. Next. And you can see an image here, early rendering, but really the goal is to play up that topography with some additional grading and really amplify that corner with some substantial planting, which marks the sequence into the bike or pedestrian connection into the campus. As well as the corner gateway where you see that extending of the colonnade over there. And the bus stop would be in that setback curb. And you can see here, this is a great case where that building steps down significantly at the corner in the upper volume to help mark that transition and turning point. Next. Moving through then in the connection east-west in existing conditions, the garage entry, that partially realized vehicle drop-off area, the residential terrace, which is a fenced off lawn. It's an amenity to that residential building, and then that existing retail pavilion. Next. And the site plan response here in a couple of steps. Really the idea here, which seemed somewhat counterintuitive to us at first, we thought, okay, this is a big plaza. Let's really open this up as a large area for gathering. But when we looked at the scale of the context, we looked at the amount of paving all throughout this development, we thought, maybe this is really the opportunity to push planting here to help screen and frame against the vehicle drop-off, accentuate the retail pavilion, and help frame this important retail corner on the Kirkland Urban Project, which that corner on the northwest is really highlighted in the master plan. We've tried to follow that. So that planting frame was sort of the first move. Next. And then framing and screening against vehicles, really trying to control where people are moving through there, because we know that there will be a lot of cars coming through. And then cutting diagonal movements through that planting for additional desire lines through and across this plaza space. Next. We've further articulated the edge of that paving to give a more of a back and forth. So it's not just one long colonnade, but really a little bit more textured and layered as you move through. Next. And then expanding and opening up at that important retail corner, also because that orientation helps collect the different vectors of movement and the relationship to the stair down to the lower plaza. And here you can see an image that Colonnade, really the goal is that this feels like a garden experience more than just a big open paved plaza with meaningful connections and moments to sit or gather with retail. Next. That cross-section through the Colonnade, it's a little bit of a shift from the original master plan, but we think really strengthens the intent, which is this clear pedestrian connection with weather protection. And this also, by slipping that movement under the building, gives us more space for planting and trees along the vehicle lane. Next. And then to the overlook side of things, this is where, again, we think it is better to open up more paving. And of course, there is a lot of existing paving out there today. Really thinking about how that seat step, which you'll see in that little diagram there, and in the next rendering, we start to actually lift that sequence of the overlook wooden steps up a couple more steps to give a little more vantage and frame to the overlook, and wrap those around to give the retail pavilion a little bit more framing as well. Next. That move you can see here where we lift that soil up a little higher, it also gives us some more soil depth so we can get really nice big trees in here. And you can see that relationship then of really extending the seat steps, but opening up to the corner, that primary retail space. And we're looking towards the daycare here, which we'll visit next. Next. The daycare, good comments about that. When we've been out there, we've definitely seen parents, families dropping off, picking up, and wanting to leverage that opportunity. Next. So what's been proposed is actually having a kind of companion lifting of that ground plane to create a stepped edge, which is a place to sit and wait. But it's also something that's a little bit more playful than just a bench. And we've had experience with kids enjoying this kind of thing to kind of climb and scramble a little bit in a very safe manner, but fun nonetheless. Next, and you can see a view here looking back towards that seat. So the playground is just behind us here, and we've got an idea of warming that up with some wood materiality. And then you see that diagonal path there, which is linking into the bike entrance. So that becomes another valuable kind of garden path through the site. Next. And then the fire lane in that bike path here, kind of a hard thing to represent. There were some questions about this before, but really, you know, it's fairly densely screened with conifers along the lower parking levels, which are the base of that building. And then the fire lane coming through with a planted buffer planned. Next. And you can see that condition here. So you can see that playground area, that seat zone, we've bended the path intentionally to give that little bit more of a feeling of discovery and invitation through. That also connects to the other entries and movement directly to the south. And then the bike lane is really the main thing here. We are looking at differentiating the material to try to break down the overall scale of the path. But really this is, you know, planting on both sides. We can get some good scale there. We've got enough soil depth and movement through to the bike lane or out to that playground area. And here you can see the cross section of how that's starting to work. And I think that's the last on the landscape. Oh, sorry. We do have a couple extra planting. We don't have to get through all the planting details. I really just wanted to emphasize here, we're working with a fully native palette, building on some of the existing plants that are surrounding, but thinking about something that's going to be really ecologically beneficial, a little bit more complex in terms of the intermixing of species and layering of species, and even bringing in some things like red alder that can be a fast, early, rapid growth species and get some good soil buildup through nitrogen fixing, et cetera. And we can talk about that more in detail if folks have questions. Very conscious to the mixture of shade and shadow through here, which Thomas will touch on in the facade later too.
Thank you, David. I'm gonna sort of shift gears here and talk about the building structure and its relationship to the facade design and also how we string to articulate the building within the site. But I thought I'd start with some of the ideas around the kind of overall structural system of the building. So a more conventional timber building would have either a solid wood core or a concrete core in the middle. What we're really looking to do with this is create what's called an exoskeleton, which is a perimeter lateral system. And it's this sort of expressive wood diagrid. So we're really excited to explore that as an option for this project and involving a really amazing team of people looking at that system. But I think one of the advantages is we can have fewer interior columns, we could have more longer spans, and we also have a more sort of expressive wood structure on the exterior, and it, you know, and also reduces the carbon footprint using mass timber. So some of the key facade drivers that have come out of that, really thinking of highlighting the diagrid structure. So the diagrid has a lot of formality to it, you know, in terms of its shape. So something that sort of contrasts that, but also complements it and amplifies the character of the building. We've also really focused on, you know, a high performance facade and really thinking about how there's different amounts of glazings depending on the various exposures. So really calibrating the amount of glass at each facade, but also giving it a sense of a whole. And then really thinking about how the building can be responsive to particular areas of the site. It is an urban site. I mean, we have office right up against housing. So really thinking about programmatically where things are. So we kind of keep that in mind, and also creating these cuts to actually create both bring light deep into the building, but also not have all these activities in certain areas right at the exterior, right across from somebody in housing. So the massing and the kind of facade types, we have in the blue, like a primary facade, which really highlights the timber structure. And in the purple is more of a fully glazed facade where the cut happens. And then within that are operable windows that can be opened completely in the nicer times of year, and that the spaces that are connected to those areas are called what we're calling mid-door spaces that could be in some aspects naturally ventilated. So they'd be active and they would have landscape actually in those spaces. And then on the ground floor, real focus on the retail experience behind the colonnade. We're thinking of a wood facade or something that has a more richer materiality, but it's also protected from the elements. So when you're down there, you really sense that, you saw that in elevation. We did a series of solar studies. One of you actually asked that, that we'd show you this last time, and you can kind of see, you know, the exposure and the shading throughout the year. Obviously, in you know, in summer it's quite good, and obviously in the winter it's not great. So no surprises here, but I think hopefully this will give you sort of a sense of how that works. But I think what I think is interesting to note here is, you see how those cuts, those major cuts, actually provide more sunlight in that particular area at the corner. They actually do have an impact as opposed to just a subtle cut. So it actually is opening up areas of light. And I think that's an important takeaway from this design. So we really wanted to come up with a really elegant, materially rich, thickened facade that has a lot of shadow play that could work on the different elevations, but also is at the same time really responsive to the fact that we don't want as much glazing on, say, the south facade and the east and west facade, but we want a lot on the north facade, which happens to be the facade that's really facing towards the public plaza. So we've worked on creating a system where we have spandrel glass, insulated wall panels that sort of fits within this larger grid. So you can sort of see how that works here. So on the south facade, there's much less transparent glass, but it still really highlights the diagrid. And we think of it like, if you think of a beautiful structure of a branching structure of the tree, the facade is in a way the canopy that's hanging off of it, and you sort of sense both at the same time. So this was sort of an inspirational image for us in terms of seeing through this canopy at the view beyond. And we've worked really with our structural engineers and internally to develop this really elegant long span structure that connects to the diagrid and works on many levels with mechanical systems and daylighting. And we're really excited to kind of continue to develop, and that becomes a major element that you see from the exterior. One of the things that was inspiring to us was this image on the left and the sort of species of leaves and trees in the Pacific Northwest, thinking about how those could inspire a terracotta profile. So terracotta is, you know, it's an earthen glazed in many ways product that's actually been used in the Northwest for quite a long time. You'll see terracotta glazed buildings in downtown Seattle and downtown Portland. And we think that we could potentially explore that, bringing that back to this particular building. And it has a real material quality. It also has, like you see here, the ability to create these profiles that you saw in the previous inspirational images. And we're still, you know, working on the material character and the color of this, but these are sort of different types of terracotta. One on the top is an unglazed terracotta that comes in different colors. It's very much like baked clay. And then there's also an opportunity to really glaze it and have translucent glazes that respond to the profile of the terracotta. So I think it would be a really beautiful signature building that would fit within the larger context, but have its own character. And so we're still looking at the idea of a color that could be applied to the glaze. And these are just some studies. You know, this is still something that we're working on internally. If you have any kind of input on that, you know, great to hear. We're just sort of at the early stages, but you can kind of see how this facade could work, where you have the terracotta elements that have a profile that can have a lot of character. Then we have the sort of spandrel panels that are up high, and then you sort of see the diagrid elements there. And we have a couple rendered elevations, not every facade, but to give you kind of a sense of the northern facade of the building. So this would be the main entry, the retail at the bottom, and then this big cut that, you know, opens out onto terraces and also into these diagonal spaces. That happens also on the corner as well. So you can sort of see how we've been very careful about articulating the different levels. So at the ground level, it's a more open diagrid that looks back at the retail. And the second level, we're sort of opening it up a bit more. And then when we get to the upper masses, it gets a little tighter. So just to kind of articulate the differentiating levels, because the second level is potentially a little bit more public of a level with conference rooms and shared spaces, as opposed to on the upper levels, it's more office. So this is the view from the west elevation as you come up. The cut that talked about here, which is pretty significant and really articulates that corner, but you can sort of see the differentiation of the terracotta as you sort of go up the building. And then this is the east elevation perspective. And I think you saw this sort of landscape view that David showed from this corner looking down. And then it really opens up. There's quite a bit of grade on the street. You know, you don't really realize how much there is, but I think what's nice about the grade is it gives the opportunity to really create a beautifully scaled bicycle corridor. So this would be purely for like bicycles on that side. It's also fire access. So there's no vehicles that would be allowed in there. So it really creates a strong connection, and that actually connects in a way down to the park on the backside. It's kind of a nice little sort of slip through if you've been down there, and we can leverage that. You talked about the building height and the rooftop strategy. I just wanted to touch on that, but the thought here is really to create two major green roofs and then two sort of major solar arrays on the other side. So that's where we're at with the mechanical and a step back in the middle and then a skylight that sort of lights a central stair down through the middle of the building. I think one of the things we've, you know, had to do, because we're not maxing out the kind of building envelope for this building, we have to be very sort of regular and kind of be very strategic about where we make the cuts to actually meet the program needs of the client. So that's what we've tried to do here. And you can sort of see what's nice, even though we can go higher, we're kind of scaling this building down, which fits with the residential. I think it also fits with the fact that it's a nice public plaza up top. And this is just a diagram of like how the roof would be broken out. You talked about the green roofs, the sort of mechanical in the center, and then the PV panels. So we had a couple minor variations, design departures that we've kind of worked through with the city. We brought these up with you last time. I'm gonna kind of conclude with these. The first is really the North Access Road. And you know what we've really done, I think, is done something that's slightly different in that we provided a covered arcade that actually buffers the traffic from the pedestrians along that side and allows us to do something that's a bit greener and I think more dynamic. So, you know, I think it's still kind of keeping with the spirit of creating a pedestrian environment, but it is a little more urban. And I think if you saw with the palette that David is proposing, and David just finished a project for us, the Adidas headquarters in Portland, an incredible landscape along there. And I think it would be really beautiful addition to this campus as well. So you can sort of see what we're, that it's a little bit different than the master plan street section, but we think it really captures the spirit of pedestrian. And you can sort of see here how that's working and the dimensions of the spaces. Here's the arcade. And then the second one is the south fire access, which I hope that you from what we've shown, you really understand. I know last time that was one where it's a little hard to wrap your head around what was going on back there. But, you know, the sort of typical master plan street section is really car focused. And what we're doing here is basically creating a 22-foot fire access lane that's slightly different from the standards, but I think we've gotten good sign off from the city, and it's really a pedestrian, bicycle oriented street that connects to a dedicated bike entry at the back of the building. So I think that we feel like this is an improvement. So you can sort of see it here. I'm just showing you the drawings that David did previously, but we do need this free, and we'd have a series of bollards here that obviously the fire department could remove in case of an emergency. And then this becomes the sort of way that you would come in and into the bike entry. So this is just a section showing that drawing one more time. And that's what we have to show you. Thank you very much. Please look forward to any questions or clarifications. We have lots of other drawings. We need to show them to you, but thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Thomas and David. It's time for the questions for the applicant. This is not time for comments or opinions. We will have time for that later. So any questions from the board members who would like to start?
Yeah, I've got one question on the colonnade. I know that the diagrid inside the building will be the mass timber exposed wood, which is beautiful. As you're walking on the exterior, is there a cladding that's going on around that's going to have a different materiality?
It's actually, we're thinking that would actually be a lighter precast concrete.
Okay.
Point. So it's a more durable material. It's sort of expressive. It also allows us to take out an element. If you look at the diagrid up higher, and you can sort of see that in this rendering. So it's a little denser up here, but by doing these precast elements, we can remove a strut. So that's sort of where, you know, we would love it to be wood, but it's not necessarily realistic in our climate.
Yeah. So
if that answers your question.
And I guess also, can you talk a little bit about maybe the ceiling materiality and I guess what would be the storefront windows there?
We're really wanting to keep that as a wood ceiling that then kind of comes down into a wood storefront. So as even though that's a sort of structural precast element, we can be really beautiful. We've done precast concrete that can have texture and really precise. But then you have the sort of warm elements. You have these elements, and then this would be a wood ceiling and a wood storefront.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, who's next?
This is Randall. On the here, what, you know, that is going to be, is it, that is totally exposed wood and going to be finished? What's your ideas or your concept between how that, or behind how that's going to be finished?
Are you talking about the ceiling or the facade at the ground?
The verticals. The verticals on the diagrid.
Oh, those
behind the windows.
Those on the ground floor would be precast concrete.
But the rest of the building going up, as you look through the terracotta framed windows and that type of thing, what is the wood going to be? What are your concepts for the wood behind it?
Well, when it's interior, you know, you can do like just a clear sealer. So there'll be a glass. There's a glass facade that protects it.
Right.
That's all interior. But
well, you know, that's what I'm looking at. But is it a light texture? Is it a dark texture? You're showing it kind of light. So if you're using.
Yeah, we would probably do a light. I mean, you can see our building behind me. This is a mass timber building. It's actually, we have no finish on the wood here. So it's quite light. I don't know if you can see it here, but it's, you know, so I think it would be, our idea is it would be a natural, either we're probably looking at a Doug fir right now, sort of a natural color.
At the last meeting, when we were looking at this, the concept of the terracotta around the windows and that type of thing, I don't think we're part of that presentation. And no, so we were looking at the glass facade in front of the wood, and the wood had a very prominent stance on the building.
Yeah.
And the diagrid has a very prominent stance within this particular element here with the glass facade and the terracotta around it in front of it. But I'm just looking at it and saying, okay, is it through the introduction of lighting within each of these elements?
Yeah, we're planning on adding perimeter lighting outside of the diagrid. That's part of the plan. So that we would have this, you know, an element where it becomes prominent along the facade, you know. Okay. So that's actually something we're looking at with the lighting design, so that, you know, it really becomes an element that, you know, it's obviously on the absolutely sunniest day, it's not as visible, but, you know, a lot of the time it'll become this very kind of iconic element in that area. So
I think the north elevation, it will be very prominent quite a bit of the time because it's in a dark, or it's in shadow most of the time. And so I'm just looking at how you accentuate the diagrid that we really looked at last time. But you've got I like the idea of the terracotta on the building and the north promenade coming, you know, the colonnade coming down, and the departure that you're, minor departure that you're looking at from the design standards. Where you pull that pedestrian way under the building, it probably couldn't be better because it really does give you some spectacular approach to landscaping and that. Now, how deep of a field do you actually have under these trees? And what, you know, I always look at that. Yeah, you're building on top of a concrete slab and trying to put trees on top of it. And I'm just curious as to the spread of the roots of the trees and how that all and that type of thing.
Great question. I can respond to that. The short answer is it varies around the site, but we have been targeting 4 feet of soil depth. I mean, our office has done probably half the projects we've done are on structure. So we have a lot of experience with this. It's a mixture of the types of trees we're planting, the soil mix that we're working with. The thing that really helps us here is the contiguous soil volume, because depth is one factor. Volume is the other really important factor. And we've got a lot of linked soil with these really big connected planters. So 3 to 4 feet of soil depth where we mound up, we even have more potentially. We actually usually do foam underneath that because we don't need more depth, but really maximizing the horizontal spread.
Is part of this area, the larger portion of landscaping, is it sitting on top of an existing parking structure at this point?
No, that's really a lot of the strategy in this has been holding this new footprint. Part of some of the edges, you know, are calibrated to the adjacent space, but they also respond to the extent of the new garage, because that's sort of the ground we've got to be able to beef up for loading in minimizing any overlap to adjacent existing structure.
Good.
Yeah, this area is right.
That area right there.
Yeah.
Is that over now existing over, parking?
All everything you see in green there, that overlay green footprint is all over new structure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Strategically.
Yeah, I mean, the parking is, it continues completely under, you know, as you probably know, all these buildings. So
if you need additional structure in that area, you've still got the ability to do that.
We can beef this up. That's right. Yeah.
No, I think that's really, we've been planning for that with the design of the parking, design and structure. It's not like an afterthought at all. But I appreciate, I mean, I think it's great that you bring it up. If you don't do it, obviously you can't have this lush landscape. It's not possible.
Well, I've seen projects where the landscape can only grow to a certain point and it doesn't grow to what was shown. So I just curious.
You can kind of see here where, you know, what's...
Yeah.
I do think, like David said, they've done some really great, you know, lush landscapes over structure. We just did a project with them like that. And it's not just the depth, but it's also actually the chemical soil you specify. And I think there's a lot of things to it to make, you know, it's like any kind of garden. If you put the right stuff in the soil and the right fertilizer and the right plants, it makes a huge difference.
Another question I have is on the south elevation where you're facing the residential units.
Yeah.
How are you treating that as far as glazing or anything there any differently than the rest of the project? Or how do you, I mean, that is very, very close to a multifamily, multi-story facility.
Yeah.
You're an office building and it, you know, 5 o'clock at, you know, in December,
you're going to be awful bright. If you look at this is not maybe the best image, but one of the reasons we pulled this cut over, it's not aligning with the cut on the north, is this is sort of where that apartment building sits. So that, you know, and that this area is primarily conference rooms, you know, and not as much like open office. So I think in a way, so we have the diagrid, which actually in some ways provides a kind of screening privacy when it's oblique, but we also reduced the amount of actual glazing on that facade pretty significantly. So if you look at this diagram here, on the south facade, the opaque areas are increased both on the horizontal and the vertical. So you sort of have this one strut visible. So we're actually, and that's also an energy code thing. You know, we can't have more than so much glazing. So our idea is to have a grid that relates to the diagrid geometry, but where we need to kind of close the aperture down.
Okay, so, excellent.
I know that somebody had their hand raised. I don't know who calls on who, so.
Amy, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, so I'm new, so I'm not sure if people raise their hand. So yes, so I do have quite a few questions. So hopefully bear with me and we can start with the site plan and the landscape plan. Do you mind describing to me how you envision people using the shuttle pickup area and how does that relate to the sidewalk colonnade on technically what is supposed to be the primary entrance on 6th Street, and also how that relates to basically the two corners, the north east and the southeast corner, you know, which kind of in a way is like your most public view, right, from the rest of the city.
Well, the shuttle stop is for the client shuttles. It's not a city bus, just to be clear. So it's for shuttles that'll be dropped off. And there'll be a secondary shuttle on the other side of campus to pick up. So it's really enacting and energizing that front area with folks coming to work throughout the day for the owner. So that's just to clarify, this is a shuttle stop for the owner, not for the city. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you can see from this image, you know, we're really pushing the landscape out and then you kind of deal with the grade by coming back around, and then it opens at the corner and then allows you to come into the arcade. So, you know, I think we're navigating the fact that, you know, this, you have a fair bit of grade on this part of the site, which is a bit unusual. And then it sort of flattens out as you get back. And then, you know, as you, I'm sure you spent time in this part of the city, it's like the sort of energy of the site is internal. And then we're kind of trying to create a gateway, but we also have the issue that we have garage access, we have to have a turnaround. So how do you do that within the kind of constraints? So, you know, you would get dropped off here, get off, and then you just walk down, and you could walk along that arcade where there's retail at that corner. Then there's an entry into the main building in the middle, and then additional retail, and you see in the distance the brew pub and the kind of landscape that draws you in. You know, in the earlier, it might be, I mean, it might be good for you to sort of pull up maybe the first presentation, because there's actually more, if we could provide it to you, more sort of diagrams talking about this as a gateway and how that works. So that might be helpful in terms of answering your question. And, you know, I don't have that handy right now, but I'm sure Tony could provide it, because I think it is helpful. David, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add to that. And I just wanted to make sure I answered your question.
Yeah, so I really appreciate how you walked me through, like if I were an observer and I was standing at the corner, what would I see? And that's kind of what I'm interested in, just to really, you know, understand how you, you know, and I did understand that that's a shuttle just for their employees, but I wasn't sure how often you'll see people getting on and off the shuttle and how activated that area will be. Just the, you know, the experience of walking from that shuttle pickup to the main entrance of the building. So,
well, you can sort of see here, I don't know if this helps you. This is the shuttle drop off area right here. And then you get out, and there might be a bench for people waiting there. And then you walk, and then this corner is kind of carved back. There'd be some active retail on the corner. And then you walk along the arcade with benches and planting on one side that kind of protects you and flanks from cars that would be going into the garage entry or going into this drop-off. And then the main entry to the building is right in the center. The reality is once people get dropped off on the shuttle, that's a certain amount of people, but there'll actually probably be more traffic or pedestrian traffic coming from the other two buildings, three buildings in the development, where people are coming up the stair through the arcade and into the building. This, there'll probably be more activity coming from this direction than this direction. That may evolve over time, but that's sort of the, probably the way it will be for at least five or six years. But you know, that's, those are really the pieces. And then we, you know, we, in terms of that, you know, that's really your access and the kind of public elevators here and then the stairs going down. But there'll be a lot of, obviously there's retail, as you're aware, if you've been to this development, there's retail all along these layers on these, this upper arcade. And then this is a big kind of outdoor, you know, brew pub seating in this location. So, you know, that's sort of that experience once you get past the entry and you're looking at the brewery. And then this is where the stairs go down to the other building. So if that helps you, sort of walks you through it. And then when you get in this area, you're sort of seeing that kind of zone. And I think, you know, David and the team, I mean, there's a lot of plaza on the space, but maybe not as much sort of landscape. And we think that having a bit more landscape could actually make the other spaces nicer and a little richer. So that's that sort of view where you've come out, and then there's the landscape that David talked about. And I think the big move we've done, I think, to keep more light on the plaza and also have not such a strong, huge, tall corner is really cut it back at the second floor and create these terraces that, where the whole building sort of steps back in terms of its mass. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. That actually informs, in a way, my second question. And maybe this is I'm not sure if it's you guys who should answer it or if it's staff, but I did notice that the standards required a 12-foot minimum sidewalk, and the effective sidewalk under the colonnade that you're proposing is what, 10 foot 9 inches, I think. And I was wondering, and I don't know if this is something staff can explain, if there's a flexibility for reducing that width.
I think what we're asking for in the minor variation is basically that. And I don't, you know, it depends, you know, how you measure it. It's not like in some areas it's wider. You do have like a structural, you know, you have a structural element that encroaches on that, but, you know, it's actually, it's 12 feet to the face of structure, but then it's wider beyond. So, and it actually increases as you get further down.
And I think a key other aspect of that one is that the 12 foot sidewalk has tree wells in it. So your clear path of consistent traffic path of travel is not actually 12 feet in that master plan section. So we have a more comparable condition with that little bit of meander of the planting and trees. So you could really look at it the other way and say that we're doing a 20-foot sidewalk, you know, apples to apples. We're just showing a whole lot more planting because that path of travel slips under the within the space of the colonnade.
And I wanted to add too, they're referring it to a minor variation, but we kind of use that term from a design review perspective a little differently. So in this case, they're asking for a design minor modification of the master plan. So that's something I did outline that in the memo, but basically that's a decision the staff will be making, and then we'll have them incorporate that obviously into their plans, but that's going to be a decision from a staff perspective. But obviously you guys will have the say in the design of that, but the actual width and that kind of thing, that's something the staff will look at. So.
Okay, thank you. Next question. I'm very intrigued with the idea of net zero water. And I think that's commendable. And I was wondering if you guys can explain how that is expressed in your landscape or even in the design of the building.
I think maybe David could talk about the landscape, and then maybe Dannon, do you want to chat about some of the strategies we're looking at from a building perspective?
Sure.
Yeah, there's a couple different things we're exploring right now in terms of any collection within planting areas. So that's one thing, to try to, you know, leverage paved areas to get water into planters. But really, you know, species selection is a big part of it, and soil mixture. So species that aren't necessarily super water loving and like the drier conditions. And really, native planting is a big step in the right direction there, because, you know, plants that grow here are used to summer droughts. And we're also looking at things that trend further south and hotter, because that's where we're going in the future. So plant selection is a big part of it, and then trying to direct more water into the planting. Cisterns and things like that aren't usually the best solution in our climate based on when it rains.
Sorry, unmuting there.
Okay.
In response to the building, we're still exploring the net zero water options with the owner. And there's a few options we have, varying obviously by cost as well as impact. So we're not at this time like necessarily landed on the strategy we're going for, but I think we know we're providing vacuum fixtures in the building with reduced water is one version, as well as capturing runoff and reusing that for gray water. So we're basically also about ready to start dialogue with the city in terms of jurisdictionally what's available and what's allowed in terms of water reuse on the site. So we'll still be looking at that further. But I think it's definitely one of the things that we're really trying to target, given all the rain that comes in the area, and how much use we're going to have on the site. So we can certainly present more about that at the next DRC presentation with probably a little more specificity.
So
yeah,
sort of question.
I think like that some of the things we're really excited about, it's just, you know, when we started this project, this idea of stewardship and really thinking like what would have the most impact. And we're also looking at how we source the wood and the timber for the project, and really thinking about how the forests, you know, where that wood is sourced are managed, because that definitely has a upstream impact on the quality of the watershed. So it's not just about water conservation, but it's also about sourcing. And I mean, I think the client's really open to looking at things like these things like vacuum fixtures, which you may know are toilets that work without water. So there's like things that are really kind of out there that we're looking at. We just have to make sure that it works. So I think we're really serious about that. And I'm glad you brought it up, and we want to provide more detail, you know, probably in the next meeting, just on what exactly we plan to do.
Yeah, I think we'd love to hear that. I was just thinking, if you are planning to go beyond what LEED Gold normally requires, and you're introducing more innovative water conservation strategies, or, that would really be a plus and something that we would definitely welcome.
I think that is, you know, we intend to, and maybe the client can step in if I'm saying something out of line, but I think the idea is to really be innovative and go beyond, you know, the specific, you know, water conservation requirements of LEED Gold. I've done lots of LEED Gold buildings. And I think our goal is to do something that is maybe more specific to this place and kind of pushes ideas about net zero water at the next level. So
thank you. So my next question, regarding the Mid-Door Gardens, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're ready to talk about the landscape concept for that, beyond, I mean, obviously the sketches that you have.
I mean, they're kind of an interior element. I can, you know, so if you look at, you know, you can sort of see here, the idea is that there would be operable windows along those and then landscape inside. You know, so they would have that sort of visual appeal. And we want mid-door spaces is an idea, between outdoors and indoors. So it's mid-door. So the idea is that in our climate, when it's nice out, you can actually open the windows, and that climate would be naturally that space, which would be kind of a room, almost like a open balcony, has also a glass facade on the inside that separates it from the more conditioned areas of the building. So that's the concept. I don't know how much that, you know, how much that, that's definitely a design element, but, you know, sort of it's sort of a little bit ambiguous of what's inside and outside of the building.
Thank you. So now I'm going to move on to the architecture regarding the facade. Can you help me understand how this may feel like I'm getting into the weeds, but I will explain why I'm asking this question. Where you have on the ground floor the concrete diagonal columns connecting mm-hmm. to the second floor. Will there be a plenum there? And so it wouldn't look like it's connect. I mean, I guess I'm when I'm looking at the corners, it seems like your corners where the first and second floor connects are the most interesting parts of the diagrid, but maybe I'm just imagining something that's not there. So maybe let's start with my first question is, Are these V's all lined up in more like a two-dimensional plane, or do they actually weave in and out?
No, they line up. And if you look at the elevation, that's maybe the easiest way to understand it there. So you can sort of see how they line up. But it's slightly different on the ground floor where it mirrors it. Instead of bringing the whole structure that you see on the upper floors down. So that allows us to open it up. But you know, they line up, but they alternate as they go up. I mean, there's a lot of geometry in that. And what we've tried to do with the facade is you can sort of see here and maybe here is kind of celebrate the geometry by kind of aligning the facade in a way that features the diagrid. And then where you have the main entry, we have a three bay, and then we're sort of articulating as it comes around. But that there's a break here at the second floor too, because it's like a slightly different articulation where it's not cut back like the volumes that sit on top. And then the idea is really to open up the corners here a bit. And that's how the terracotta kind of pushes back at those points to create a more open glazed corner at that second floor. That's also where the diagrid sort of steps in and opens up. And so that's the kind of, we've been through, we're just showing you the best version. We've been through a lot of versions that were not, that maybe, and it's interesting when you have the geometry of the diagrid, it's like, it's very specific how, what works, at least in our view, and what maybe doesn't. And when we have too many elements, it gets too busy, you know, is what we found. And so we'd like to bring the kind of character with the materiality of the terracotta and the profile. We think that is kind of a nice nod. The building, that terracotta will have a lot of depth to it, a lot more depth than maybe a typical curtain wall facade. So we like that kind of depth in our buildings. Could be, you know, almost 7 or 8 inches. That's much more than you can, unless you put a fin on a aluminum curtain wall, we've been working with the manufacturer and they're doing some really amazing profiles, glazes. So we're excited to kind of go that direction.
So, to segue into my next question, I guess, with the terracotta,
mm-hmm.
Have you started looking at how, because I'm anticipating you do have your plenums, and somehow you have to either hide that or express that. So what I'm seeing is that your elevation right now, while it's very clean, I'm not really sure it's going to be that clean once you're really, yeah, there.
It will be, because our mechanical systems are actually integrated into these Vs. So there won't be, you know, we have a perimeter beam. And if you look at the inside, it's maybe helpful. I can go back to, so you can sort of see that plenum, you know, that's what it's like here. That's the solid part, right?
Right.
On the outside. So that, and then this would vary slightly depending on the facade, but on the north facade, this is what it would look like. On the south, this might get a little wider, but the mechanicals all sort of integrated into these Vs.
So I love this interior perspective, because there's so much honesty and at the same time craftsmanship. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to share my opinions right now, but the reason why I'm saying that is, you can even tell from this view that this, you know, where you have that horizontal member, that's actually a deeper dimension or depth than the I would call it the very thick mullion, right? So the top is you're going to see a horizontal element that's, yeah, thicker on top than on the bottom.
Yeah, I think, you know, and how
so it's not going to, it's not going to look as clean as your elevation is showing.
I'm not, well, this might be a touch glazed element. So we've done things where this is a full sheet of glass and this is a touch mullion, or you have a butt glazed element right there. So
what I'm saying is that's a an opaque element, right?
Yeah, versus, this will be opaque for sure.
Right. So it's still gonna read. I mean, it's even though it's behind your grid, it's still gonna read as almost like a spandrel glass.
Yeah, that is the intent. I mean, okay. We can't have it be all glass because of the energy.
And that's what I'm trying to clarify, because the elevation drawings seem to make it appear like you're going to have very clean grids.
Yeah, right? I think we will. I mean, we've done similar. I mean, I think, you know, that would be an opaque area anyways, because you would just see a solid wood beam, you know, but we have to insulate it. So, regardless, it would be opaque, but we're just covering it with spandrel glass, or a solid wood insulated zone with glass on the exterior. But I think we can detail it in a way where it really will look like, and it will have reflectivity. So I think we can detail in a way where it will really still feel very light. I think we'll actually look better than these renderings, because we've done spandrel where, you know, at first glance, it just looks like kind of a dark glass. You can give it a depth, and I'm pretty confident we can do something really nice.
Thank you. So my last question, regarding the top, have you also studied out how you're going to terminate the building? Like how's that?
We feel that a really clean, beautiful profile with the terracotta is enough. And then having solar panels or a green roof that's slightly articulated. I mean, I think what our focus has been is making these super deep cuts that are vertical and that impact the ground plane in terms of the scale. We just don't have a lot of extra room for lots of setbacks. We have to be kind of targeted about where we put them. But we think that thickness of the terracotta at the top will get a really nice, you can sort of see the profile as it turns the corner here. That'll be a lot of depth and will kind of signal the kind of termination of the building, especially at the corners. So we feel like this is a really beautiful design, but also kind of calm. So that's sort of where we've left it, but happy to, you know, talk about it more.
Hey, Thomas. Sorry.
Thank you. Amy. That's all I have.
Okay.
Hey, Thomas. I have a question, and it's kind of like tied to what Amy asked a couple of minutes ago regarding the top termination.
Yeah.
So looking at the rooftop, you have a series of solar panels as well as gardens, rooftop gardens. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if there's any requirement for railings or taller parapets. And if so, if you guys are planning to, how are you guys planning to address them if there's any requirement?
Yeah, it's a little bit. I mean, what I've done on other projects is, we do a super light steel railing with a dark black mesh that kind of goes away if we need that. It depends on the OSHA requirements. Our green roofs we try to set them back so they're not visible, you know? So depending on the angle, that you might just see a tiny line if a railing's required. We've also done things, it just sort of depends on what the city, you know, different cities have different requirements for protection. You know, we can potentially just do tie-offs with a cable at the edge. So it's a good question. And we definitely, you know, we need to talk to the city a little bit about what is needed and what the owner's comfortable with. But
yeah,
I think that's a great question. And we're happy to kind of show you a detail of it next time and really add it into the view so you can really see what we're thinking.
Yeah, that'd be great. I guess that's going to impact a lot. Well, not a lot, but significantly what you guys are trying to express. The building is very clean right now with terracotta profiles.
Yeah.
And adding something else on top will change the aesthetics of the whole building, especially since you are carrying the same profile throughout the entire perimeter of the volume.
I think we could, I mean, in the office, if you look at, you could look at our office, Albina Yard in Portland on our website. And what we did is we actually set back the metal and then we pop it up a little bit in the back. So we have a gravel stop. So it's like, it feels really thin at the edge and then steps it back. We're not required to have a, and then we actually, one of the things we've done is we can pull the parapet down on the roof. So there's ways we can make it really visible, invisible or less visible. I'm glad that you brought it up and definitely want to make it look really clean. So it's great that you're actually getting to that level of detail.
Yeah, we'll leave that to you guys. So for also regarding the roof, I've seen pretty much all the perspectives and images, the mechanical screening, it's currently shown as white. Could you just elaborate on what type of materials are you anticipating to use?
I don't think they'd be white. So we don't know. I mean, I think a dark color probably it's conducive to what other, you know, I mean, I think we haven't gotten to that level of detail, honestly. But I think usually we've done a dark color for screening. And I think we would, you know, this is probably still in development about, you know, I mean, if we can set things back a certain amount, you probably from most angles, you're never going to see it. Or at least within the kind of complex itself, it'll be invisible. So we will do is just once we get a certain view, we'll check it out from all the different views. You can see from the rendering, it's not, none of that stuff is visible from that angle, or it's very subtle. It's not like we deleted the, you can sort of see it here. That's the only thing that's visible up there from that angle. And we're pretty far back already because it's in the center of the roof.
Yeah, I'd just be interested if you guys have any further stories, if you could share them with us for our reference. Also, regarding the building itself, given the type of massing strategy that you guys worked with, it has created these terraces, outdoor terraces on, I think it's the third floor of the building.
Yeah.
Will those terraces be only for, will only be designed as gardens, or they are actually intended to be used for tenants?
They're intended to be used for tenants. So there's at each, so if you look at this rendering, at each of these spaces, there'll be doors that are operable. And then this bay here, this bay and a half, is actually a mid-door space, which is sort of like Juliet, over a really large Juliet balcony. So this one on the third floor has an outdoor component. These just have doors that actually open, and then it's just more inside. But there'll be landscape inside and outside in these locations on the floors.
Okay, so the mid-door gardens are actually going to be terraces. And do you anticipate to have the green areas very close to the edges as depicted in the renderings, or actually you're going to have chairs, tables, umbrellas, and all that type of furniture equipment?
I mean, I think we'd have very much want to have perimeter landscape elements. exactly how it's configured. I think that's to be developed. I mean, I think the intent of the renderings is what the intent is. I think we're going to develop those designs, you know, for that landscape component. That's something David will be working on as we sort of develop, get into the next phase of the design.
We're also working with occupancy calculations on those exterior terraces for egress, et cetera. So there's going to be a kind of a play between the amount of open area for furniture and tables and occupants and fixed planners. So we're still looking at that currently.
Yeah, that's what it's as assembly. So I'm pretty sure that that's going to like raise your numbers for the floor. Go ahead.
No, I said, you know, we'll have a fair bit of landscape because we're going to have to, just to kind of cut down on the size of the terrace.
Yeah, and also I was looking at the presentation slide number 63. It has, and I think it's an isometric of the building. It's called timber diagreed lateral system. Mm-hmm. And it's showing the south facade. Now the south facade, those terraces, the terrace that is located at that area has a series of platforms. I'm just wondering if it's just one terrace or if terraces are stacked one on top of the other.
Because they're stacked, but they pull back. They're not all the way to the edge. The idea is that those are more balconies and it's facing south. So you have south exposure all along that edge, which makes a big difference. You know,
do you know how much they're pulled back?
Dannon, I'd say like 10, 15 feet, right?
I think, yeah, we're looking at it varying as it goes up, it sort of steps back. And I don't know how much each floor, but it's roughly 10 feet, I'd say at least.
Okay.
I don't know if we have more detail on that.
Yeah, I think we're having a 10 foot minimum in that location, the step backs.
Yeah. I'd have to kind of dig it up for you.
And do you guys know if it's only going to be one type of railing or you're going to use different types, different materials?
I mean, I think we want to make the railings. We've typically done, we're showing a picket here, but I mean, I think a lot of times we've done is steel mesh railings that are really transparent, and those are really, you know, that work really well. So it's a stall product. It's just a steel frame and then a really fine stainless steel mesh. So that's typically what we've done, but I think we haven't. That's, I think, for the next meeting is the articulation of that. We haven't gotten into the details of that yet.
Okay. And just my last question to you guys, going back to, I think at the facade that is facing a 6th Street, right. You have finished, I think it's wood panel system finish.
We're thinking that this would be a wood system, you know, some type of rain screen wood system behind here, but it's just sort of a continuation of the wood interior curtain wall, but you know, that's something we're still, if you have thoughts about that, that's where we've left it for now.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, it's a pretty long solid wall that you have there. Do you have any idea on what the strategies are intended to be used to mitigate blank walls? I'm just saying these because I've seen all sorts of things. I've seen some buildings that have landscape, some others that integrate and actually bring a local artist to do some art walls there, some paintings. So it depends from building to building and applicant to applicant. So just wondering, what are you guys planning to do there? As the same, it will be on the other side, the south facade.
Yeah, I mean, I think our plan is to do a really beautifully detailed wood wall. wall that has some profile to it that maybe reflects a little bit what's happening with the terracotta, that has a carved profile. So it doesn't, it's not just a typical, you know, wall that you would see where it's, you know, TNG cedar, but has some kind of character to it. And that's still something to be thought about. We're also thinking maybe it's a kind of white precast concrete. We're still looking at that has texture. I think we want it to just be special. So, and then the plants can actually grow up on it or around it. Or one of the thoughts we had was tying steel, you know, a diagonal steel growing field that the plants could then grow up onto it. But, you know, we need some solid wall. We have on this area of the building for structural, and also it's sort of where the, you know, kind of is the mechanical zone. And because of the way the grade is, we thought this was the right place to do it, because it's really hard to kind of create useful spaces with that grade change.
Okay, thank you. That's all that I have.
Thank you.
This is Randall. I have one quick clarification on your, when we talk about a green roof, and that is not a public access roof.
No, it's not that.
It's,
access.
It's purely them. Sustainability and that type of thing. And so any railings or tie-offs in that is really what is the OSHA requirements for maintenance and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think, thank you for clarifying that. That is not a accessible roof at all, either of these things. They're not meant as terraces. So okay.
Thank you.
Okay, King, would you like to speak?
So many good questions and good answers. I'm totally fine just being a good listener. I just have two really simple questions. The first one is what we touched in the conceptual design about getting local artists involved into the project.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be brought up for the future?
You know,
is that response meeting?
I think it's something that we, it's really a kind of owner directed thing. We think it'd be really great to think about art in the landscape and something. And, you know, I think we just haven't gotten to that stage. I think it's definitely something we will respond to. I believe, I don't want to speak for the owner on that. I mean, my intent is that we could find a way to do something interesting, but that's really an owner, or if it's also a city requirement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's something I would leave their court.
Yeah, I did read it. It's required by the master plan.
Yeah, I think we would definitely, if it's, sorry, I don't have the master plan, every piece of it in my head, but if it's required by the master plan, we're definitely going to do something that mm-hmm. integrates it into the design. I think there's a lot of opportunity to, you know, even with the play area for the, you know, the sort of drop-off area for the kids, if there could be something mm-hmm. playful that's sort of associated with that piece, I think that would be exciting.
I do want to say that landscaping connection to the daycare facility is a huge improvement.
Yeah, that's, I think, great. If something, an artist could do something that's beautiful, but also maybe a little playful, that seems exciting to me. The 1% is required.
My second question might be for John or Tony. Do we review the signage on the building? The reason I'm asking is the only thing, I think this is amazing design. The only thing I'm not clear is what you call like wayfinding in terms where the building entrance is not that clear design wise to me. I think some decent signage would really help.
You know, I think that's also a little bit of an, you know, I mean, there's the retail signage, which surely will be an important element, you know, about how that's articulated, you know, within the overall, within the building and within the design. You know, I don't know whether the owner is, you know, looking to have large signs announcing their entry. So that's something, it's another thing that You know, there's a number of existing buildings on the site, and it's not like the entries, they're clear that there's an entry, but they're not necessarily signed with the owner's company. So I think that's something that, you know, I think we would sort of want to bring up with them.
What we could do, Tank, because like the Kirkland Urban has an approved master sign plan already. So I think Tony can provide a little bit of background on what was approved for the remainder of the campus, and just see how potentially it could apply to this building. Because they will have to amend it at some point because it would be new signage. And I could see where, given this type of building design, it could be difficult to do the signs that are approved on the other buildings because it's just more surface area for those signs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's something we're going to have to come back to at some point. I don't know. Because the issue is also a tenant might have a particular desire in terms of signage. So it's sort of like until you get really specific about what you're doing, sometimes it's challenging. But we're going to develop ideas about how the signage could happen, because we have to think about where the power is, all these little things that, you know, we have to kind of anticipate as best we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you for the answers.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I couldn't answer everything.
That's fine.
Yeah, and John and Tony, thinking about some of the, the master sign permit and some of the requirements site-wide, you know, I was also curious about, you know, the art. Is it handled? I can't recall. Was it handled through kind of a master site program, or is required public art done building by building? Because I know a lot of the fountains and things are all kind of designed, you know, kind of at once, and I'm not sure if each building has its own separate requirement.
Yeah. I just pulled up the master plan here. I just want to kind of clarify what it says. So it's on page 7 of attachment 3 that I included. But it says art commitment. It says in an effort to encourage integrated art into the project, Park Place is working in collaboration with representatives from the cultural council and local art community, and will identify and create opportunities to create art into the project. It talks about that it's not for a single phase. These are project wide. So that's kind of how that, so there's not a, it doesn't specify you have to include art with this specific building. It's got to be kind of a project wide thing, looked to get local art into the project. So.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's, Tony, something that you and the owner, I mean, mm-hmm. would have to sort of dig into, right? What's been done, what is necessarily needed for, you know.
Yeah, space. Yeah.
I think it's time for my questions now. My first question is about the public spaces. I was wondering if what we saw today was sort of the final concept for the public spaces that are at the ground floor, at the entryway floor. And I see that my question might not be very clear. So I'll tell you, I'm coming from a place where I think that this building is very iconic, and it will attract a lot of attention and a lot of traffic. And I kind of see it as a hub, a multi-generation hub, if you will, for, like, I could see myself as well as my teenage kids going there, as well as families with young kids from the daycare, because it's very attractive and it's nice and it feels kind of international. At the same time, and I know there's not a lot of public portion into the ground level surface, but I do not see a lot of... let's call it pedestrian engagement stops and points where I would like to see. Personally, I think that would be more interesting, or you know, even attractive to see. And another thing is that I'm not really sure. I would like to ask, maybe you had the opportunity to have kind of an estimated traffic study of that area, what is expected to be there, and based basically on what is already existing on the other Kirkland urban buildings. And how you see that happen? I'm just curious.
I mean, I think I'll start with maybe the question about traffic. There's been really extensive studies on the traffic, you know, with the folks that are done the logistics for the loading. And so, and I'm not, I don't, that's a whole other study, you know, so I probably, I wouldn't even want to be the one to describe all the work that's been done. But Dan, I don't know if you want to touch on that. I think there's been a huge amount of coordination, both with the existing parking and the new parking. And, you know, this was part of a larger master plan that, you know, basically assumed that this, you know, assumed that this work would be taking place. So I think that addresses your concern there without getting into more detail. And I think that we're totally prepared to share that with you and the city, you know, if you want more detail. Mm-hmm. I, you know, on the pedestrian side, I don't know. I feel like this is a superly generous landscape in a way, you know, in terms of at least for me, and I'm just talking for David here. I'm super excited about the richness of this landscape. And I think that, you know, one of the things when I was at, and this is just my experience of being there and spending time there, I think what is a little bit, maybe not as strong in this area is the landscape itself. You know, you have a lot of existing planters and a lot of plaza space. And I think what's exciting about this opportunity is really creating spaces, you know, where you have greenery and you can actually sit next to plants. So I guess I'm super excited about that. And, you know, I think maybe David could address your concern. I do think there'll be more detail on the landscape components, but I think if you do look at, you know, the richness of what's being proposed here, I think it would be really unique. And kind of, like you said, be a draw. You know, especially like, you know, like the seating areas here. Because this kind of landscape isn't necessarily part of the development, like internal to it, at least for me. So I don't know if that, I mean, and then you talked a little bit about like seating areas. I think if you look at his plan, the idea is to create places to sit sort of within this landscape. You can kind of see the seats here that kind of come along this arcade, so people could sit in the zone and then along the perimeter. And then obviously you just have places for people to actually have loose seating throughout. David, I don't know if there's anything.
You
I'm sorry, oh, David. Yeah. I just want to clarify that I was not questioning the landscape at all. I think this is a very blessed addition to the you know, entire Kirkland urban surrounding, and I'm very impressed by it. But that was not what I meant. And
okay,
let me clarify this. Yeah. I was talking more about maybe the engagement opportunities. So, like, for example, you see the colonnade and there's some seating there. So I was wondering, like, are these retail seating? Are these public seating?
Okay.
Who will be responsible for them? What will they look like? I can also tell you that in the summer, during my last visit to Tel Aviv, I saw some amazing installations there that kind of involve everyone. Like, you see something that is a picnic table. At the same time, the same installation is also a slide for the kids. And it's also a working station where people can just sit and, you know, charge their laptops and, you know, so these kind of things I'm talking about.
Okay, sorry. I was going off and defending David because I like his work so much. I apologize.
Oh, I agree. I was not going there.
I think more is more. That idea of things that are more, I mean, if you have things that are inspirational to you on that level, I mean, you know, I think a lot of this, there's definitely the stuff that we would control as part of development, which would be sort of more fixed pieces of seating that you see here in the foreground. And then depending on the retail component, then, you know, that also, you know, is, you know, they're going to have their own seating. But I mean, we would love to have the opportunity to think about what the loose seating can be. And we've done that on other quote campus projects, but I think there's a little more complexity here in that you have a subtenant that's going to be taking these retail spaces. So that's the only caveat I would say relative to that.
So the colonnade seating will be basically mastered by the retail.
Yeah, but maybe there's portions of it that are not. So I think that's a good question. You know, there's a lot of space out in this zone here that I'm showing that may be a place where there's another sort of seating that's just more
playful
or available to more people. And I think that's something that we should investigate. I can't make that decision on, you know, I think we would have to sort of look at it, but I think it's a great point and I think we should investigate it.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is from the site design, we really are trying to layer in more inviting sequence. So it's not all one big thing, okay, it's good or it's not, I come in or I don't, but there's multiple scales. So as you're moving along the colonnade, there's finer grain benches, there's flexible seating attached to retail, then you get out to this kind of collective room, there's opportunity for pop-up, there's that more topographic feeling integrated into the site, stepped seating. Just to break down the overall scale, but still leap flexibility, because a lot of the stuff that comes to my mind in what you describe, those are things that come and then they go and then they get reinvented and they come, you know, they're not always fixed long-term pieces. So we always want to find that balance between the shorter term, like pop-up kind of fun, playful thing. Not that the long-term can't be fun either, but you know, finding space for flexible, but also finding space for, you know, long-term, the 50-year solution. And that's more where we're trying to get those topographic movements to play that framing site role. And then, yeah, there's still a lot of space though for the flexible.
Oh, I agree. And this is why I was asking if this was final or you're still planning on detailing that area.
Yeah, we'll be coming back for our next design review with the proposed details for these benches.
And the site here too, just to clarify, this primary plaza area is actually outside of our project boundary. This is already built. So we're really just trying to make it better with our, you know, components. So we'll be coming back with more detail, but a lot of these spaces are just, we're working with what's there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to enhance them.
I understand. Okay. Well, I will be looking forward to that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Does anyone have follow-up questions? Okay. Are there any member of the public that we're waiting for to speak?
So currently it looks like there's 10 attendees online here. If anyone would like to speak at this point, go ahead and just use the raise hand feature. Give a minute here. And it doesn't look like anyone.
I don't see anyone.
Yeah.
Do.
Okay. Last call for that, I guess. Yep, doesn't look like it.
Okay, so with that, we proceed to deliberation. So unless we have other issues to attend? I don't believe so. Would anyone like to start? Do you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I'll dive in first here. Why not?
Okay, thanks, Adam.
Sure, leading the charge. I've got the staff report pulled up and just kind of using this as a basis with some of the questions that they proposed to us here. So does the building do a good job of connecting 6th Street to the existing public space? You know, I think a lot of that effort was on either side of the building with the colonnade, kind of that landscape entrance. And then on the opposite side, I guess the south side, with kind of the double tandem use of the fire entrance with a pedestrian and bike access. So I think it's been thought about. I think they've done a great job of it and explained it. Second one was does the building provide enough horizontal and vertical modulations when viewed from key vantages? I think some of those recesses and pullbacks with the terraces really address those quite well. I think they explained that pretty thoroughly. Third one, have blank walls been adequately addressed? I don't think there's too many blank walls here. I think the facade is the depth of the facade, which really brings some interior angled wood elements out, and then some of the details on the glazing. There's multiple levels that make it quite interesting. So I'm not really seeing many blank walls that haven't been addressed here. And does the exterior building design material options provide enough diversity to the project? I think so, for the same reasons as the previous one. So for those items, I'm pretty happy with what they presented and discussed.
Hey, Adam, this is Carlos. I think I kind of like disagree with you in regards to the blank wall treatment. I think that from a pedestrian perspective, there's more that the applicant can do in regards to that. Maybe there's been a conversation between like bringing some artist, or probably it's a space where something can happen. I think that some of the renderings have very intense planting, which can or cannot be intended for that. I've seen some other installations, for instance, one store in Washington, D.C., I remember that I entered this courtyard and they had a concrete wall. It was blank. So what they did, they brought an artist to actually create some art. So the artist painted in a very singular way or depicted the mountains that were close to that area. So I mean, that's just an example, but I think that there's more potential for that, especially since it connects the other buildings, and it kind of like exposes the building to just drivers or pedestrians that are walking through that area. Regarding to modulation, I think that there's more that we need to see from the applicant in regards to the type of profiles that they are intending to use. I saw that the second level has a different modulation than the other levels. So I'm just more intrigued to see what they have to present to us in terms of just the type of profile or the way that they are breaking down the building. Also, another thing that I noticed is the opaque glazing sections. They have them as gray right now, but they don't specify what type of color or finish they are going to have. There were some comments about it earlier today, but still, I think that's something that is up in the air. In addition to if there are any requirements based on OSHA for just all the equipment that is on the rooftop. I think those are points that I would like to see, and I think that we need additional feedback from the applicant. Also, I noticed that I think that the material board, we haven't seen one, but we've just seen like pieces of information, but still it's kind of something, well, they haven't defined exactly what the key element that is gonna be the mullions of the window system or the facade system are going to be. Exterior lighting is also pending. So in general, I feel that they are heading to into the right direction, but there are still pieces of information that I'll be inclined to see and review on another meeting.
Carlos, you did mention in your first comment with regards to the art. I think we should maybe be a little selective and maybe more clear on what we're requiring, if we're requiring, because I guess I hesitate to just have a standard response to slap art on everything. Right. Not every building needs to be an art gallery, right? And this is a damn good looking building, and with some of the detail and just the type of construction is so unique. And it's going to be unlike any, like the building itself is going to be somewhat of an art piece, right? Well, so, you know, I think it could be, there could be, it could be deteriorated, right? We could be reducing the value of the building aesthetics by slapping art on it. So I think that should be something that should be discussed a little more in detail or possibly not done.
Well, I kind of agree with that, but still we haven't seen the final material selection for that rain screen. Well, that panel, wood panel. So I'll be just like very cautious to say it's okay. I think that doesn't require anything. I mean, I'm not saying that they need to like do some art on the wall or something like that. I think it's up to the applicant and whoever else they need to work with to kind of like land that. Even though I don't think that this whole development has something similar, but still it's not up to me to tell them what to do. I'm just like throwing up some options. I know that at Totem Lake they had a condition like that where at the back of the building they had a huge service door for I think pickup trucks and all that, and the applicant decided to do something that was really I think that added value to the whole design. They painted, they did some painting on those doors, but I mean, that's just an example. I'm not telling them to do it like that, but still something that they need to take a look at or evaluate probably.
I will add, so when you look at page 25 of the design guidelines, there is a kind of a list of different options to treat blank walls, and that includes artwork, vegetation, materials, that kind of thing. So I'll just kind of direct the applicant to kind of take a look at that. So
I know in that facade there with that wall panel, I guess on the 6th Street side where the grade goes up, there was pretty heavily vegetated or at least landscaped in front. So maybe we request maybe a more detailed view of that, kind of showing the material kind of with the layer of vegetation in front of it. Because if there's trees and plantings that, you know, are taller than people there, you know, that might mask any artwork that would be applied to it. So I think a better look is something I'd request there.
Hey, Amy, you're going now?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Adam, did you want to say something? Sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to clarify that I think somewhere in our, you know, DRB guidelines, we're not allowed to consider landscape as a way to cover blank facades. Many moons ago, gosh, am I the longest serving board member now? Man, how time flies. When I first joined the board, there were a couple of projects where there were some blank facades. They had some gorgeous renderings and landscape plans, and the trees just didn't take for whatever reason. Or maybe they didn't end up planting what was originally there. And we just had some big, ugly expanses of, I don't know if it was split face CMU or if it was some other masonry or brick, but there was a lot of complaints and attention drawn to that. And so we can't really consider landscaping as a way to cover that wall that's facing what's going to be a bus stop and a lot of shuttles. So I agree with Adam that this building itself is kind of sculptural in a way, and we don't want to just throw up some cheap mural, but treating that facade, you know, with very fine detailing or fine material work and doing something creative that way, you know, we're going to look at some, I'd like to look at some options from the architects and design team on how they want to treat that east facade.
I assume we're not supposed to talk right now, right?
So should I go?
Yes, please, Amy.
Okay, so that's actually great segue because I did want to chime in on that treatment also, what we're calling a blank wall along Sixth Street. I think that you guys have a great opportunity to activate that area in many different ways. I know you did kind of suggest that you're going to look at maybe applying the terracotta there. My concern with that is, I love your concept for the terracotta, and the profile I'm sure will be absolutely amazing. But it's the kind of treatment that one can only appreciate if you can actually walk up to it and run your hands through the grooves, and it's that tactile experience. And the way that wall is located with the, you know, with the landscaping in front of it, I don't think that people will appreciate it or will be able to appreciate it. So what I'm about to say may sound crazy, but these are just to give you an idea of what I'm thinking. I think that maybe what you can do is really play on the slope there and do something more, what I call something that gives delight, something that makes it a lot more fun for the people who have to wait there and wait for the shuttle. So for example, in Woodinville, in downtown Woodinville, instead of regular benches, they installed swings. And it was quite unusual or quite a surprise to me when I was walking down there to see these swings. And I noticed that people were more likely to sit there because they can swing. If you do something like that, you may meet the requirement for activating that space without having to do something with that blank wall. So that's just one example. The other thing that I think you guys need to think about is weather protection, because that will be an area that will be used all year round. And I just think it's going to be very miserable in the winter time to be sitting on those benches without any covering. So again, maybe the covering for the seating area becomes part of your blank wall treatment. And I'm sure that you guys are, have great designers with great ideas for that space. So now I'm gonna step back and talk more about the big picture, and which is the building itself. I definitely think that you have what I consider a illuminated jewel box, and I agree that it's going to be iconic. Again, it's going to be delightful to see during the day and at night, especially when it's all lit up. For our next meeting, I'd be curious to see, once you develop, the plenum details, what it's going to look like during the day versus night. Because I think the fenestration and the rhythm and the symmetry and proportion of those windows, would be very interesting to further study. And I don't know if you really have any opportunities to refine them further. I think that that locating the conference rooms on the second floor is an absolutely positive move. It reminds me, someone mentioned Washington, D.C., and I'm going to also point to a wonderful example in Washington, D.C. This is the Shakespeare Theater, where they actually put the cafe area on the second floor, and it's all glass. So when you're walking on the street, you actually see people sitting and, you know, dining on the second floor. And so it does contribute to the pedestrian experience, even though it's on the second floor. It's, you know, I would definitely encourage the applicant and, you know, the owners of or the tenants of the building to really think about how to, you know, to complement the ground floor activities with how the conference rooms will be designed. As far as the landscape, you know, I hope you can somehow tell the story of all your innovative water strategies through the ground floor landscaping. Again, I think that's another way to engage the pedestrian. And regarding the terracotta, I love the terracotta. I have to confess, the first thing I think about is Louis Sullivan's buildings. And obviously that's not what we're aiming for here, but that's what you can do with terracotta. And so with that in mind, again, you know, when you talked about the ground floor and having those concrete diagonal columns, it seems to me that those are great opportunities to put the terracotta instead of just using concrete. Concrete reminds me more of brutalist buildings. And it seems to me that there's an opportunity here for, again, for the pedestrian to appreciate what you're doing to the rest of the building. You know, with the terracotta on the upper floors, basically, when you're on the street, I don't think that you can, again, touch that, right? And you can't read that that's actually a special material. But if you try to, if you take that down onto the ground floor, then it becomes, you know, something that even the pedestrians, whether or not they work and occupy the building, will be able to appreciate. So I think that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Randall, you're next on my screen.
Just a couple of comments. And I really do like the direction the building is going. I think you've done, you know, in the architects and landscape architects, you've done a great job at this point. I mean, got a lot of work ahead of you to bring the details together and that, but as I look at it, I mean, I really do like the terracotta arrangement on the building, top to bottom, and how that all goes in, and setting the building on. And Amy, this isn't negative or anything. It's just with, you know, I can see the idea of touching the terracotta, and that's a product that's very touchable. But as you look at this and you say, okay, you've got a base under this building, and yes, the wood isn't going to work because it just isn't the right environment, Northwest environment, and so really putting something together that's durable and survivable, and so the concrete, I have no issue with. The biggest thing I have is that the terracotta, I think, is going to be a fantastic element on it. And I just hope that the grid that's behind it, the wood grid behind it, you don't lose that. I mean, you've got a play going on between the two, in my mind. You got a play going on between the two that the grid now becomes kind of a secondary screen behind it that is, you know, that carries through an element in that, but then you have a very strong element of this terracotta on the surface. And I think there's going to be a lot of fun playing with that. And I think the lighting, I think the jewel box type, you know, comment is absolutely there because of how you light the building and how it's going to light up those two elements and play each other. But during the day, the terracotta may be the dominant factor. And at night, you know, the diagonals will be the factor in that. And so I just, you know, I think overall the way that it fits on the site, how you have to tuck it into what's existing isn't the easiest job. I think the way that you've tucked the landscaping in, you've taken the pedestrian pathway in underneath the building and not taking it out. I mean, as far as a modification, I strongly support that modification because it just, it actually brings the building in and people are using the building as an element, as a screen or a canopy without building a canopy on top of it and sticking it out. So no, I really do like the direction you're going with it, the material usages. I would support wholeheartedly, and I'm just, you know, I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing what, you know, what the details are coming in. And how you finish off the parapet. I mean, yeah, it's a straight line building, you know, very, very straight lines, but that's the building. And, you know, if we look at modulation of parapet, there's no need to do that. Your cutbacks do that. And it's the character and the type of building that deserves a straight line. And that, and then the use of the terracotta is, it isn't just little pieces of terracotta. it appears to be very sizable terracotta and that, which is, you know, something that really is kind of new to downtown Kirkland. There isn't, I'm not sure if you can find much terracotta in downtown Kirkland. So it's kind of a new element and it separates itself from the other buildings that are on this campus on the Kirkland Urban, which I like because it kind of keeps some of the eclectic nature of downtown Kirkland. When you go to downtown, you know, it's kind of eclectic. And the Kirkland Urban was starting to get very corporate. And I think this one pulls that away. And after spending time, you know, on the site this afternoon, just walking the site and looking at it and seeing what's going up and what's there, I think this is just it just finishes it off really nice. So no, I like the direction you're going and it'd be my comments and I'll give it back to Shauna and let her continue on.
Thanks, Randall Tink.
Yes, I think it's my turn. I'm supposed to talk. I'm gonna try not to repeat anything. I do like how the building is progressing as well. And especially, I like the design, and especially the design consideration you put on the south elevation, giving to the south side neighbors, like moving the recessed area toward the back and then set a conference at the corner. I think that's very thoughtful. David, in the next meeting, I do want to see some case studies, how you can stabilize those trees in that pedestrian plaza, because if that's not feasible, then we're losing a lot of landscaping area. And then in terms of the variance request, I'm all supportive for the south side, the bike lane combined with the fire lane. I don't have any issue with that. And the north side, I think it's fine too. I just wanna emphasize like a lot of area, those arcade area, they look kind of dark to me. If there's a way you can brighten that area through lighting or lighter building material, that would be really helpful for pedestrians. So I do support both. And I'm looking forward to the next design meeting. Hopefully next time you can show us the sketch model that you showed a little bit earlier. Looks pretty cool. I know it's getting late today. Don't want you to show today, but thank you.
Thank you, Ting. I guess I will try to be quick and efficient, and I will just go over the points that we were, from my perspective, that we were supposed to talk about today. So I agree about the building doing a good job connecting to the 6th Street and about the modulation. About the blank walls, I think we have discussed that quite enough, but I would also like to see the materials that the architect select or the owner select before we can make any, before I can make any judgment on that. About the diversity to the project, I think, as I said before, that this project is very iconic by itself and it does not need to show, unlike maybe other projects where we need to see more diversity. I think this one is kind of a universe of diversity by on its own, and it doesn't need to demonstrate more. In terms of materials and colors, I like the terracotta very much, and I'm in person, I'm more inclining towards the natural clay color of the terracotta, because I think that's a great transition between the glass and structured timber and the landscape, and it makes kind of a, it gives it kind of a good earthy and welcoming feeling. But I guess it might be a little too, and it also, sorry, connects to the uptown building that is right next to it with the color scheme. But I would like to see more where you're going with the materials and color selection. And does the design of the pedestrian plazas around the building meet the applicable design guidelines, but is it adequate? I think we will need to see more details, especially about the public engagement. And I think I also provided the feedback on the use of specific materials and landscaping. I appreciate the thought, the really deep thinking, David and Thomas, about the landscaping and the zero water waste and the long-term thinking about how really the environment will be affected by this. And I guess we cannot speak to the minor modifications until a decision is made by planning. Am I correct? John, Tony?
Yeah, so the minor modifications is strictly a staff decision. Obviously the design of those areas is within your purview of reviewing. So we'll make a decision on if, you know, if the sidewalk and that those elements are wide enough and meet the intent of the requirements, and then obviously the design would be your guys' decision.
So would we need to make a motion about what we think of the design if it qualifies for the modifications or not?
No, it's really talking more, like I say, we would look more at the site planning element section of the design guidelines to kind of dictate the design elements that are incorporated into that. The physical dimensions is really something that staff's going to be looking at as part of the modification.
So. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just one more comment that I think that I'd like to make is that I really like the having the second floor of the building as a meeting conference floor. Maybe it kind of mitigates the hectic plaza, maybe not hectic, but busy plaza floor with the office floors, and it gives some kind of, just like with the timber structure and the grids. So when they become more dense as we go up, so it's kind of the opposite, where the people are becoming more few as we go up, because the plaza is a little busy and then the conference floor is a little less busy. And then the office is a little bit more individual. So I kind of like this this transition as we go up. But other than that, I have no further comments. And I was wondering if there are any other comments, follow-up comments from the members. Okay, I see none. Do we need to see something else or any other issues standing? I don't think we have that. So it looks like we're waiting for another design response conference. Do we have a date for that?
Yeah, so that's something we can talk now to the applicant about what they were thinking about turnaround time for the next meeting. I think originally, Dana, we kind of had talks maybe about December, but I'm not sure if that's something that's still on the plate for you guys.
Yeah, that was a previous kind of target spot. Okay. So I was making sure that you all are meeting in December for one. Mm-hmm. I think we certainly could use more time to develop things. We want to come back and show you what you'd like to see, which includes a lot of fair amount of detail. So we just want to make sure we have that stuff done, but also make sure we have the chance to kind of everyone review before holidays hit and it gets kind of hectic and crazy. So,
okay. I mean, for right now, we have the first, we do DRB meetings the first Monday and third Monday of every month. So right now we would be looking at December 6th or 20th. I mean, obviously we'd probably need to check with the board on, I think the 20th probably might be, you know, you're getting pretty close to the holiday season there. So.
Yeah. 20th's not gonna work.
Okay. would December 6th
once you wanna, be? Unless, yeah, I'll be in different time. So.
Hey, this is Stephen Elwood. Hey, I've been quiet, but I have been listening here. Tony, I think we should circle back up with you on that, because there was a lot of really great questions tonight and a lot of good feedback, and I think we want to make sure that we've have enough time to appropriately address those things and make sure that the client has time to make some decisions so that we can come back. Our goal would be for us to get approval, I think, at that next meeting, if that's a conceivable approach. I think that would be our mission. So I think we'd want to make sure that we were fully prepared and addressing all of the feedback that we heard in this meeting at that next DRC.
Okay. The issue we run into is, so if we don't establish a date tonight, then we have to renotice it. I mean, we could establish a target date right now, and obviously if something comes up and we need to push it out, we can do that. But our ideal would be just come up with a specific date now and then go from there and change it if we needed to. So
well if we reserve the right to push it out, I would say, and we need to establish one at this meeting, I'd say let's go ahead and take December 6th, and then if we can circle back with you around that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. We can sit down and talk about things, but it'd be great to set that. Then if we need to, we can move it.
Okay.
Yep. So quick comment. Yeah. So before the board entertains a motion to continue to that December 6th date, I just want to make sure. Usually staff runs down the list with a number of items that should be brought forward to the next meeting. I think it'd be a good idea just to make sure everyone's on the same page and include that list as part of the motion to continue.
Well, so we haven't necessarily asked for what is it that we want to see next time. You know, we talked about the three-dimensional stuff and that type of thing, but I'd like to see section cuts through these step backs and that within the corners and that type of thing, where we're talking about some of the decks are 12 feet or 15 feet back or that type of thing, but more section cuts through that. And more full building perspectives. You've got a lot of great kind of perspectives that are ground level, pedestrian, that you see part of a building. But in evaluating the building, we really need to see corner to corner, edge to edge, to really take a good look at it and just see the massing of it and how the different elements fall into the massing and that. And then, you know, section cut details of, you know, your terracotta roof parapet, a little bit more detail on the windows and that type of thing. I mean, it's all stuff you're going to develop anyway in that. But again, it's just, you know, as I was looking at it tonight, there was really, you had to kind of hunt and pick to find some full building views of this to enjoy, and basically perspective views or axiometric views to see the massing of it. We were looking at things more pedestrian, and I just like to see it in a more larger format.
I would like to add that also we, as part of what I saw in the package that was presented today, the exterior lighting plan, I would be interested to see that as well as a material board. Plans specifying where the materials are going to be installed or proposed.
I'd also like to add, you know, I'd be interested to see, and again, staff, I may need some guidance here, but I don't know if we're supposed to also review the outdoor furniture. And I noticed that you do have a lot of these seating, planter seating, at least in the concepts. I'd like to see them in more detail. Like, are they just going to be concrete, or are you using some other materials? I'd like to see variety in the paving. And I noticed that for the fire lane / bike lane, you are showing two different tones. So I'm assuming they're going to be two different paving materials. You know, so things that are definitely beneficial to how a pedestrian will experience the spaces. I'm very interested in, you know, the visceral experience or effects of just the types of landscape materials and treatments that you're using. And I would be interested to, maybe you already have this. You know, I didn't see any elevations or perspective of the ground floor storefront windows or doors. And again, it's just to see how that experience will feel like when you're walking under the colonnade. And then we did talk about doing something, you know, with the space right across the daycare center, and you did show some concepts to that. And if we could see a little bit more, and you did talk about something that's more playful, and if you can bring something that's more developed. And again, maybe incorporating some kind of special paving for the area, something that I think I'd like to see.
Okay, so any other additions?
I already requested some case studies for the trees, how to stabilize in the pedestrian plaza. And also want to ask the board, I think in previous projects, we asked the applicant to provide some material mock-up, like the color or the actual siding thing, right?
Yes.
Just I don't desperately want to see. I just want to ask if some of you want to see it in case, you know, so they can bring it to the next meeting or send it to us or somehow or make a video like one of the applicants did.
I think in previous projects, there were some that were sent to us, and there were some that they actually had some kind of a canvas on the city where we scheduled the time and we went and we took a look at the material board. I think that was very helpful. So if we can establish something like that, so each one of us can stop by for a few minutes and take a look, that would really help.
We would definitely want to do something like that. That would be
great. Yeah. And I have a personal request that if you can have the material board, because it has this building interacts with so many different faces, like the north facade and the south facade and then the 6th Street. So if you can kind of print the pictures next to it of how it would look, like your material board and then a picture of the north facade surrounding and then the 6th Street and how it interacts with its surrounding, it will really help. I think it will be more meaningful. It will have much more influence as we see it because it's not out of context. It's right in its neighborhood. So if we could do that, that would be really great.
Do you have examples of things that have worked for you in the past, if you have a picture of it or something? I mean, I think I know what you mean, but anyway, it's just helpful. So if there's
I will dig up something and I will forward it to our staff to communicate with you. I think I would really like to see it in context.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, any other requests? Brad? Randall, sorry.
I believe that, the applicant is saying that, you know, want to try and hold this to one more meeting and get approval. And the goal would be approval at that meeting. And additionally, it's really having pretty much finished sample boards, finished things ready to go. It could be possible, but really trying to secure what the building owner wants to do and that type of thing and present it to where, it's starting to cast it in stone. And so, is December 6th adequate enough time to get there? And that's why I'm looking at it and saying you've got a lot of work ahead of you to get to that point. And whatever the decision-making process with the ownership is, it would be my question and that, because we need to look at it, as Amy was saying, what are your surface finishes? We get into, if you're using pavers, what are the pavers? What are the color of the pavers? What is the pattern of the pavers? And that type of thing. We'll get into some of those details, and we'll get into the details of the landscape, bench material. We've gotten into very small planners and worked planners over. So I'm just saying that if the goal is, and just from the experience, the time I've been on the board, is that if your goal is to get, final approval to move forward, it needs to be fairly well defined.
That's great feedback. Thank you, Randall. Yeah, well, and I've been taking notes here at the end. You're right. There's a lot of information that's needed. So I think we just need to kind of circle back up internally and then touch base with Tony and plan out the next meeting or potentially two, the best that we can, to make sure that we address all the feedback we've heard tonight.
Sure. And I'll go to Brad, since he's the old guy on the committee. Do you concur with me, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely, Randall. And it seems like the designers, they now realize, the design team knows what they're in for to get this final approval. We're used to seeing I've seen projects where we have an enlarged plan of every single landscape area and identifying, you know, just like everyone said, what kind of bench, what material is the bench made of, art installation in each landscape garden, you know, for each one of those cutouts of the building and on the ground in every corner, you know, how we're interfacing with the bus stop. Are we designing the bus stop, or is it going to be just some, you know, typical install by Metro? You know, who's designing that, and how are we interfacing with it? How are we interfacing with, you know, the brewery across the street, or across the cul-de-sac, or the turnaround? And so really getting the nitty-gritty of those sorts of details really make a project great, you know. And we don't want to, you know, kind of gloss over that with some of this. Amy brought up a good point that, you know, we might have a diminished sidewalk, you know, when it's supposed to be 10 or 12 feet wide. Well, once we start throwing some more seating out there, and if it's unplanned, you know, and if it's up to a tenant, you know, it's going to be an even narrower sidewalk. So making sure we're calling out what these, you know, a designated area, if it's going to be a cafe, designated area for cafe seating. And then we see exactly what our sidewalk is narrowed down to. Maybe if it's prescriptive from the building owner, what types of seating, then we have a better idea and control of that connection from the street into the rest of the building and plaza at large. So yeah, that level of detail is usually what we're used to seeing before we kind of give a final sign off and approval.
Okay, does anyone else have something else to add?
I just want to add, I had a few items that I don't think got covered. Obviously, the big thing I think we discussed a lot was the treatment of blank walls. You know, I just direct the applicant to look at the blank wall treatment section and the design guidelines. And it basically, like, kind of go back to Brad's point where he talked about, you know, yeah, this kind of, we don't want to just use vegetation to cover those. That actually, this calls out multiple treatments. So that's just a thing to take a look at from their perspective. The other thing was, I know Carlos had some discussions about the roof access and how that's all going to work, and if there's going to be railings or anything needed up there. So that's something that we want to iron out as well from the design team.
So we need the details head to bottom.
Yep.
And the other bottom, yep. I think this is what we need to approve the plan. We just need more details possible.
No problem.
Every aspect. Yeah.
That's what we okay. do. So we'll get you the details and more details.
Model.
Provide. So thank you. Thank you very much for your insights and feedback.
So, John, do we need to have a movement to continue?
Yes, we need a motion.
Motion, sir. Motion. Yep.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we continue to a final review.
Second.
Oh, and we need a date.
On December 6th.
Thank you.
Second again.
Okay. Those in favor?
Oh, we need to do a roll call.
I need to do a roll call.
Yes.
Okay.
Roll call. So,
Randall Brand?
Yes.
Carlos Castaneda?
Yes.
Brad Brown?
Yes.
Ting Chen?
Yes.
Shoshana Cohen?
Yes.
Adam Crane?
Yes.
And Amy Tarse?
Yes.
Thanks.
So motion has been accepted to have the next design response conference on December 6th. So I guess we are done with this discussion. Do we need to pull attendance for the next meeting?
Let's see here. So the next scheduled meeting is October 18th. It doesn't look like we have anything currently on the agenda. If something does come up, we'll certainly pull the DRB a week before. But currently, there is nothing on there. So
So now we need a motion to adjourn. Are we ready for that?
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
I assume everyone is in favor.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for a very fruitful evening, and have a good night.
Good night. Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.